matter of J. Friedrich. May we please have appearances of counsel, starting with the OAE.
And J. Friedrich, Your Honor.
Friedrich, thank you. Mr. McNamara, please go ahead.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Ravner, members of the court. Respondent was charged in a three-count complaint with committing 10 violations of the rules of professional conduct. The special master determined that respondent committed all 10 of those violations. The board determined to dismiss the known misappropriation charge along with three related matters. My argument today focuses on how respondent knowingly misappropriated grievance real estate proceeds in multiple ways and thus should be disbarred for his actions. Respondent committed knowing misappropriation of client funds by taking the $185,767.67 that his client Angela De La Rosa endorsed over to his attorney trust account. This check was put to in his attorney trust account at his direction. He told Ms. De La Rosa to endorse her net settlement check over to the trust account so that the money could not be taken by creditors. Respondent admitted to the Office of Attorney Ethics that he told her about how to shield money from creditors. He even recommended to Ms. De La Rosa to leave the country. He committed knowing misappropriation a second way by taking a check in the amount of $18,600 drawn from the Lester Schwab Trust account, which had been given to him by that law firm as additional proceeds that were due to Ms. De La Rosa from the sale of her home, and then depositing it into his own bank account as if that money somehow belonged to him. He committed knowing misappropriation a third way by never giving Ms. De La Rosa the full amount of the settlement money that she was owed even after she retained counsel, new counsel, Mr. Restituyo, to assist her to get her money back. Respondent even charged an attorney's fee for a real estate closing that he didn't even perform. He assessed a legal fee of $1,400 against Ms. De La Rosa when he returned an insufficient sum of money back to her after she had requested the money back multiple times and after Mr. Restituyo had requested the money in writing. In terms of background, respondent told Ms. De La Rosa to endorse the real estate settlement check over to his attorney trust account to protect it from creditors. Ms. De La Rosa continued to make payments for legal services that respondent was doing for her. And so she endorsed the check over to his trust account. And this shows that she and respondent had an understanding that she endorsed over to the attorney trust account and it was going to be held inviolate for her by him. Shortly after he received this money, he transferred the entirety of the money to a new business account, and then he subsequently withdrew money for his own purposes. Respondent knew that he had not earned the $185,767.67 in funds that he had transferred. When he received the $18,600 check drawn from Lester Schwab trust account, he didn't have permission to take that money either. He took that money too, as if it was his own. After Ms. De La Rosa hired new counsel, he returned the lion's share of the $204,367.67 total that he had received on her behalf. And this is further proof that he knew that he was taking clients' money that was not based on earned fees. As yet further proof of respondent's dishonest conduct, while this matter was being investigated by the Office of Attorney Ethics, respondent lied to the Office of Attorney Ethics multiple times. He told the investigators that $20,000 that had been deposited into his trust account had been given by a friend of Ms. De La Rosa, when the truth was that the source of the funds was respondent and his wife from their personal funds. When asked by the OAE about the $20,000 deposit, respondent stated, quote, monies came in and they were given to Angela and they were for her business. When asked who the check was from, he misled the Office of Attorney Ethics investigators again. He replied, quote, it was from funds from one of her friends, end of quote. When asked who the friend was that made the specific $20,000 deposit, respondent told the OAE, I can't tell you. It was yet another misstatement. Respondent further misled the Office of Attorney Ethics by telling the investigators that with regard to the money that he took from Ms. De La Rosa, that it was a retainer. And when asked whether it was deposited into a business account, he replied, yes, it was in a business account, yes. In actuality, the money was deposited into the respondent's trust account. He then withdrew that money and deposited it over to the business account. If Ms. De La Rosa really believed that the $204,367.67 was to be used by respondent for legal fees for representing her, then why would she have continued to make payments, a series of payments for legal services, as respondent had to concede at the ethics hearing? Also, if she really believed that that sum of money, the $204,367.67, was to be used by respondent for legal fees for representing her, then why would she have repeatedly asked for the money back? Why also did she hire an attorney to get her money back? Respondent knew he was invading the funds without permission because it was his own admission that he counseled Ms. De La Rosa about shielding the funds from creditors, and that's why the money was put into the trust account. Clearly, she had an expectation that the funds were being protected in the attorney trust account. Respondent acknowledged to the special master that he did not have any documents signed by Ms. De La Rosa to give him written permission to take any of the money. Respondent never told Mr. Restituyo, who was the grievance subsequent counsel, that the money was owed to him because of any kind of retainer. Respondent relies on three documents, R1, R2, and R3, in support of his defense. R1 is a document dated February 1st, 2007. That letter is not on law firm letterhead. The document is not signed by the respondent, nor is it signed by Ms. De La Rosa. The document is dated more than 6 years prior to the time that respondent told Ms. De La Rosa to endorse her real estate settlement proceeds to the trust account. This document makes no mention at all about the sale of her home or the placement of the real estate settlement proceeds into the respondent's trust account. The document specifically indicates, quote, we have not requested a retainer. R2 is a letter that indicates it's from respondent to Ms. De La Rosa. This letter is not signed by the respondent. There is no place for Ms. De La Rosa to even sign the letter. This document also includes the language, these sums may also be used for any settlement that may result from either of these two litigations or any future litigations that may occur and that you have selected me to represent me thereon. Accordingly, if R2 is really a legitimate document, then this wording further establishes that there was no meeting of the minds, that respondent was entitled to use all the funds, since the letter indicates that some of the funds may be used to settle any potential future litigation. Following the date of this letter, respondent told Ms. De La Rosa to endorse the settlement proceeds into the trust account. Accordingly, the only document that was produced, which was signed by Ms. De La Rosa, is one in which she wrote, as per respondent's direction, that she was endorsing the check into the respondent's trust account for deposit only. R3 purports to be a letter from respondent to Ms. De La Rosa, and it's dated September 25th, 2013. This letter is also not signed by the respondent, and there is no place for Ms. De La Rosa to sign the letter to acknowledge that she ever agreed to the contents. An OE investigator testified that he reviewed the bills, and he stated the bills do not show a balance anywhere near the amount of $185,767.67. In respondent's brief to the court, he spends a lot of time indicating that he provided all the records to the Office of Attorney Ethics. He spent a lot of time talking about the fact that the interactions with Ms. De La Rosa occurred in New York. Respondent's brief to the court does not cover the fact that the money in question was deposited into his New Jersey trust account. It does not cover, and nor does he explain, why the trust check from Lester Schwab about any of that money was taken as if it was his own. He does not explain why he took $1,400 as an attorney's fee for a real estate closing that he never conducted. He does not explain why he lied to the Office of Attorney Ethics about the source of the $20,000. He also does not attempt to explain Mr. Restituyo's testimony that respondent did not ever tell Mr. Restituyo that he was relying on these documents to say that they were a retainer, nor did he ever provide them to Mr. Restituyo. unsigned retainers, which were not provided. Accordingly, the proofs against respondent include his own admissions, his lies, Ms. De La Rosa's testimony, Mr. Restituyo's testimony, Mr. Garibaldi's testimony, as well as the exhibits. The Office of Attorney Ethics agrees with the DRB's determination that respondent's behavior toward Mr. Restituyo and towards the Office of Attorney Ethics can justifiably be concluded as evasive and even deceptive. The Office of Attorney Ethics recommends that respondent be disbarred. Thank you.
Mr. McNamara, we had the DRB rejecting the special master's conclusion and the DRB finding that there was no knowing misappropriation here and entering a 3-month suspension as the recommendation. Did the OAE file a petition for review?
We did not.
But you're asking us to reject the DRB's conclusion?
Yes, we are.
Is that the proper process?
We believe it is, because the court is allowed to take the case up on its own at any time for an order to show cause, which is what this court did.
Right.
And in the order to show cause, it indicates that the respondent has to show cause or why he should not be disbarred or otherwise disciplined. We do believe that he should be disbarred. The Office of Attorney Ethics also does have to consider the resources that are available to our office. And although it would be, we would like to have done a petition for review, the reality is that we've lost half of our employees.
When is a petition for review required?
I'm sorry?
When is the OAE required to file a petition for review, as you understand the rules?
If we don't agree with the DRB's assessment, then we are allowed to file a petition for review, like the respondent is also able to do that.
Sure. Why does that not apply in this case? The resource question doesn't answer that.
Because I think that it still is subject to the court's review of this case. The Office of Attorney Ethics understands that at any time the court may take a case up on an order to show cause like they did in this case.
So is there ever a reason for the OAE to file a petition for review in situations like this?
I think that there are times that we do file petitions for review.
Yes, I understand. You're describing it as a discretionary process. What I'm asking is, when are you required to do it?
Well, I think that if we believe that the Disciplinary Review Board made an error, then we should file a petition for review. But I think that that does not take into account that we do not have unlimited resources. And our office has an enormous workload, and we just cannot file a petition for review in every case. We just can't.
But I don't have the rule in front of me. Does it use discretionary or mandatory language?
I can't say verbatim either, Your Honor, but I do believe that the reason why we're still allowed to argue for the person's disbarment is the fact that the court can take the case up on its own, which the court did. Also, the order to show cause specifically tells the parties that the respondent is to show cause as to why he should not be disbarred or otherwise disciplined. And we know that that language is in all the order to show causes that our office receives. So I think it is reasonable for our office to consider that we would potentially get such an order from the court, which is what we did in this case.
Please go ahead with your argument.
I completed my argument, Your Honor.
Questions, anyone?
You did file a letter with the court indicating the position that you're advancing now, though.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no mystery that this is what the OAE has pursued throughout the case. I'm not suggesting any underhanded surprise here. I just was wondering about the petition for review that we...
I think it's as simple as the point that I made, Your Honor, respectfully, is that we are cognizant of the fact that the court has the option to take a case up on its own, which is what they did, and that's why we're satisfied that we did the correct procedure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Justice Rabner, members of the court. I strongly take exception to a lot of things that have been said about me and continue to be said about me.
Please try to keep your voice up.
This is not a way I expected to end my career. In essence, I have retired. The last matter I had ended about 2 weeks ago. Was it? 10-year foreclosure action, which finally resolved itself. The only time I've ever submit any documents to this court was when I was with Lamb Blake Hutchinson and Dunn back in 1972. It was in a workers' compensation case. It was Beggs Brothers, a client. And I can never understand why the courts felt that an injury that was subject to a person's continual employment, the last employer should be stuck with the entire loss. And I came up with a lovely argument saying that, well, I just take days of work, divide it. And I went for it. I filed the papers and Judge Ryan ended up arguing.
Counsel, could I gently urge you to come to the reason that we're here?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, the reason that we're here is that they've claimed that, number one, there was no letter of engagement. The one he refers to was the first letter of engagement. And, in fact, there were other letters of engagement in between. But I didn't have them anymore. I only had two, the first one and the last one. Counsel says never signed it. That's true. Never signed it because letters of engagement, clients don't sign. That's always been my position. And I've used them repeatedly over the approximate 50 years of practice. The letter of engagement, all of a sudden, Ms. De La Rosa said, oh, I don't know anything about it. But she did remember speaking to me and conferring with me and trying to get me to reduce my hourly rate, which she said was $500 an hour, and eventually she got it down to $300 an hour. I sent a letter out confirming that agreement. Therefore, that, if anything, proves the original letter of engagement in which I was getting an advance fee. What also disturbed me, and I did not have a courteous relationship with previous counsel and the investigator, Mr. Garibaldi. I felt I was being set up. I was not being treated fairly. He said there was never any letters of engagement, even though he had copies of them. He said I did not give him documents. Well, you can see the amount of documents I did give him just by looking at the size of the exhibit list and all the documents. What he couldn't understand is I could not get him a closing document on the Yonkers property because I didn't represent Miss Angela. Didn't represent her. Did he contact the firm in New York that did represent her to get a copy of it? Absolutely not. He also said, I want to see all of the files that you worked on for Angela. I said, I couldn't do that because you know very well, because I gave him copies of the delivery receipts, that all the files were turned over to new counsel. But he said, you're not supplying documents. You're not giving me what I'm looking for. I gave him everything that I had under my care, custody, and control, what was still in the memories of my computers. Then he complained, as counsel does now, well, there's no letterhead. Well, when you print something out of your computer, your memory, do you get a letterhead? On my system, at that time, it did not. But, therefore, these must be, quote, unquote, forged documents. Now, if you look at this, the way this matter started, you're going to see that I did not have to, but I did return monies. And in fact, Angela still owes me over $60,000, which I didn't take. I could have taken it. The reason I didn't take it is because I thought we had an understanding. She was going to pay me the $300 an hour on the labor matter and the federal suit, and it was over. All right? She got her money on March 4th. If you look at the agreement, I had 30 days. Counsel says, well, she asked you repeatedly for the money back. Well, does he have any letters to that effect? Does he have any dates and times when she asked me? Absolutely not, because it never happened. It only happened when she hired new counsel And new counsel asked me for an accounting and the monies, which I submitted to him. Why would he ask me for an accounting if he didn't know there was some type of letter of agreement between Angela and my office? Why would he? It doesn't make sense. Also, if you look at the correspondence, you'll find I said, come on over, let me go over these files with you. We even set an appointment up, but he never showed up. That's in the record. Yet he goes before a trial judge and says a lot of nice things about me. He says, I didn't represent her correctly before labor. Well, a judgment was entered against her for not paying employees over $340,000. If you look at my original letter, I said a judgment was going to be entered against you because she did not comply. And it wasn't the first time Angela and her husband didn't comply, because I represented them on multiple cases. And then they say, well, there was never a bill for $200,000. Well, the bills, if you add everything up for the time that I represent her in various actions, you would find that was not accurate. Quite frankly, I was hoping she was going to tell me to take a hike and she didn't want me to represent her. This was a losing case. Now, he also said that if you look at the judgment that was entered by the state of New York, and the way that works is you don't have a trial first, you have hearings, which I went to, and then a judgment is entered. Then you go and litigate it by appeal to show that what they're relying on is incorrect. Also, if anyone ever went through the files, which I couldn't get because Angela's new attorney had that, you would have seen documents in which I was objecting to various things. He even refused to come and take the original documents, which he needed. And I said, I'm not going to mail them. Send over a messenger. The original documents that she would need to defend herself. Well, great. The judgment was entered after she fired me. Now, after she fired me, do I have any rights to go file an appeal for her? Of course not. But it was my fault. He didn't file when he was supposed to. But I was not representing her when these judgments were entered. Yet, the trial judge said it's my fault. As to this nonsense about me getting paid $1,400 for closing in New York is not correct. If you look at the billings and if you look at the monies that were sent to me by her New York counsel, it shows that the $1,400 fee was deducted. What counsel is referring to is that when I submitted a final accounting, I put in all expenses. So because I put in all the expenses that were taken from her monies to do the accounting for that closing, when I wrote out a check that was sent to her on March 4th, I must have got the monies. Not true. Was never true.
Counsel, can I ask you one question?
Absolutely.
With respect to the $200,000.
Correct.
You've asserted that that was advance fees. It was to cover legal fees.
Correct.
And yet, not long after getting them, you invoiced her for fees, and she paid you fees instead of you just drawing down the money that you've asserted was for legal fees.
Can Firstly, she had balances on older fees, which I documented and demonstrated.
You had balances on what, sir?
On old fees.
Old fees.
She owed me over $60,000, which she wasn't paying. So she started to make payments, and the bookkeeper, whatever, just credited to whatever. I think she was paying me either $500 or $1,000 a month. But I gave her credit for all that. I didn't take her monies. I didn't misappropriate or steal her monies. She turned these monies over to me. Firstly, New York attorney. Would any attorney send me a check without her consent? She should have got the check. But everyone understood, and Angela De La Rosa understood, these monies were coming to me. I was getting paid in advance. And this was all under New York law, not New Jersey law. And counsel says, well, I used a New Jersey trust account. Well, I only maintained one attorney account. And New York, my understanding is that they want you to have one account, not multiple accounts. I maintained one account, which quite frankly, and maybe I was wrong and no one brought it up, and even when I was audited, when you spot audits, 2 or 3 years before, when I was audited, they knew I was depositing New York clients' money and Florida clients' money, as well as New Jersey clients' money. And if you look at what she said about me, she never criticized me for that. I assume that was acceptable practice. I've been doing it since 1972, when I had clients in Florida, New Jersey, and then New York. I didn't maintain separate trust accounts. If that's wrong.
Did you have a business account in New York?
Do I? No.
Just a trust account?
Excuse me?
Just a trust account in New York?
No, I have no trust account in New York.
You have a.
I have a trust account only in New Jersey. I never had an attorney account in either Florida or New York. Everything was in New Jersey.
So you have an attorney business account in New Jersey and a trust account in New Jersey?
Correct.
And in New York, you have what type of account?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Other than personal accounts, because I have a residence in New York.
Okay, so you don't have any account related to
the practice of law. Not in Florida, not in New York, only New Jersey. And I've only used it.
Why did you put the $200,000 in a trust account as opposed to your attorney business account?
Because the check was written out to her, and this was testified to, that you cannot deposit a third-party check because of the Patriot Act in an account that that person's name isn't on. You actually had to run it through a trust account, and this was testified to. But I did not wrongfully take any monies from her. The judge who heard this case, my attorney wanted to ask questions about issues, including my financial stability, and it was all rejected. These monies were taken because I knew that if we went to trial and appeal on these multiple matters, the billings would be far in excess of $200,000. And I was also criticized because I was giving her advice, because a huge judgment was going to be entered against her. And she had property, she had family, in fact, an attorney brother, in the Dominican Republic. And I said, move your money there. And I've been criticized for giving a client counsel who no judgment's entered yet to protect her assets. I mean, you have attorneys in business just doing this, but I was criticized. All right? But I could not give them what they were looking for, all the documents. Impossible. And yes, I was sarcastic. I was outraged with him, Mr. Garibaldi, and there was another person involved. I just don't recall her name. That they were talking about a $20,000 check, which TD said was an overdraft. It's totally wrong. TD then told them it wasn't. It was our error. And she even acknowledges, and I think I noted where she said it, that we're not dealing with, this is not really an issue, but it's something much greater than this. At that time, they had her March 25th complaint. They had this complaint. And they're asking me questions that really had nothing to do with my trust account, but rather that complaint. Why didn't they give me a copy of it? Why didn't she put me on notice on, was it May 13th, that they had this complaint? Why didn't they? Didn't they have an obligation to tell me that a complaint was filed against you and that's what we're going to discuss with you? Don't they have to tell me that so if I want to have counsel with me, I can have an attorney with me? They didn't do it, and I was outraged. I also took out a tape recorder. I wanted to tape record what was going on as they were tape recording. I was told I couldn't do it. against the rules. But when you look at what they were doing, were they acting fairly and impartially? Isn't that what their job is? It wasn't. And to go and file in a complaint saying that I didn't represent her in Southern District of New York when they had copies of the pleadings with my name on it. Why would they put that in there? Why would they say I did the closing in Yonkers when they knew I didn't do it? Why would that be in a pleading? And each time as I've been involved, I've asked judges, people involved in hearings, that someone has to come up with a decision. And hopefully you will do it. Saying, what is a person's duties and responsibilities, an attorney, when he has multiple admissions? I practiced in at least 8 states. Now, when I'm in that state, I believe I have to comply with their rules of professional conduct. And if their rules of professional conduct are different than New Jersey's, what do I do? Do I say, gee, guess what? New Jersey disagrees with New York, Florida, Massachusetts, Louisiana. Louisiana is a totally different bag, totally different. Now, what do I do? Well, Mr. Judge, I can't comply with your rules because they're different than New Jersey, my home state. Someone has to give guidance to the bar as to how one reacts. If, in fact, it's improper just to maintain one attorney trust account in one state for all the states you practice in, then someone has to say, you can't do this. You must have multiple checking accounts. Simple. But would I do this again? Knowing what I know now, no. But when I took her money, I knew I was not going to get paid. I knew that the judgment's going to be against her. And those judgments would come before any fee I would receive. The other issues, I got sloppy with my bookkeeping, my trust account.
Mr. Frederick, what's your position on what counsel alluded to with regard to misstating the origin of the $20,000?
With sarcasm. They had a copy of the checks. They had my checks.
What do you mean sarcasm?
What I mean sarcasm, I was annoyed with them.
I understand the general that was sarcasm. Tell us about the conversation. Who said what?
I would be misleading you if I could tell you exactly what happened and what was said. I was disagreeing with Mr. Garibaldi and Ms. was it Verdi. And they always had either 2 or 3 people in the room with me. I disliked what they were doing and what they were saying. And without question, I was showing my annoyance, showing the fact I felt.
They say that you said it was funds from one of her friends.
Denver said that. I said it was monies from a friend. I'm a friend. If you look at the testimony, this is a client that was friendly with my wife, that she came to our beach house in West Hampton with her husband. They ate lobster with us, and then
let's leave lobster out of it, okay?
Okay.
Asking you what you said to the OAE when they asked you about the origin.
I probably said that, sarcasm. I said, yeah, it was from a friend. That he had a copy of the check. He had a copy of the check from my account into TD, I think it was TD, and TD out to her. He had copies of the checks. He saw my name on it.
Did you know that at the time you told them it was from a friend?
Yes, he had the checks there. I submitted these documents to them. But I'm telling you, as maybe you think I'm upset now. I am. At one time I was a redhead. I have a redhead's temperament. I dislike being played with, and I believe they were playing with me. It shows, when they had a copy of that complaint, did they have a right to question me on that complaint without giving it to me in May? And then, was it 4 days, 5 days later, I get two other letters asking the documents, and then a letter saying, oh, by the way, we got something on the 25th of March, a complaint. And no question, I was outraged, and I showed my annoyance. But if they had the checks, they knew. And that's it. I don't know.
Tell us what your request to the court is today, please.
My request is that I get a letter of of reprimand. I believe, under the circumstances, I'm, in essence, no longer practicing in the state of New Jersey and Florida. Florida, I've given up my license already, and...
You still practicing in New York?
I have two cases left in New York. I have...
That's okay. I understand.
No.
I don't have to get into the details.
All right. One I'm waiting for a decision on. The other one I moved to be relieved as counsel. And at any rate.
Anything else you'd like to add to your presentation then?
I did not knowingly violate any rules of professional conduct. If you look at my history, no client has ever been hurt by me. No client has lost funds. Even the client that I overpaid for my trust account. Funny thing, he's never called me. Oh, by the way, Jay, you sent me too much money. But no one got hurt. I reimbursed my trust account. I paid for my mistakes. With Angela, if I knew what she was going to do on the 25th, I may not have returned the monies. I may have deposited in a court in New York. But was my understanding, we were done, finished. I did not, in my heart, in my mind, in my soul, in my practice, believe that I did anything improper in using those monies in accordance with a letter agreement.
Thank you. I'll take the matter under advisement. Mr. McNamara, did you have something you wanted to?
Justice, just two very, very quick points.
I appreciate that.
During respondent's presentation, he said that the grievant made her complaint only when new counsel came on. That's what he told you. That wasn't true. He lied to this court. January 9th, 2015, he issued his personal check of $20,000 with a notation for Angela D into the trust account. And on the same day, he issued the trust account check to the grievant in the amount of $20,000 with the notation Yonkers. The letter from Mr. Restituyo, in which he comes on and asks for the money back, was February 20th, 2015, more than a month later. Lastly, in response to a question that was asked by the court about how much money was owed, Mr. Garibaldi testified succinctly by looking at all the different billing statements as to what was owed at the time that this all took place. And the amounts that were owed were $880, $510, $1,325, $1,840, and $1,435.
You're saying what was owed by Ms. LaRosa to Mr. Frederick?
Yes, Your Honor. What the respondent testified today to was he said that there was $60,000 owed. She owed these enormous balances. But Mr. Garibaldi testified as to what did the billing statement show right before and right after this took place, all these actions. And that's what was owed. And that is in more detail on pages 36 and 37 of my summation brief. Thank you.
Mr. Frederick, you have the right to respond to that if you'd like. Just those two points. Briefly,
I understand.
Come back to the center. Come back to the center, please.
Sorry. It's not correct. All you have to do is look at the exhibits. It shows that she owed me, I think the total is a little over $80,000. Also, she owed me monies from this case. What Mr. Garibaldi is looking at is not totals. He's looking at pictures of individual billings, not final billings. But if you look at the records, the exhibits from counsel, and you look at the billings, and if you want to, I can't say waste your time, but if you want to go through it with a calculator, you're going to find out that my calculations are accurate. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement.